Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest tech news. We'll talk drones, Black Hat, Windows 10, medical device hacking, and maybe even talk about some technology and free speech issues on today's show. Send your questions via email midday@sdpb.org or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio or call now 800-524-3604. You can email your questions to our guests today, Joel. John is away right now. Amos will be with us, and Jeff Litterick. That email address again is midday@sdpb.org. We'll hear from the panelists and you after this news from SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer questions you might have. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, Mac guru Joel Borovalite joins us. And Director of Technical Support at DataSync, Amos Asaf, is with us today as well. And from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterick joins us via the phone. And myself, Kent Osborne, I'm at the Dahl Fine Arts Center in Rapid City this morning. And so, guys, it's we're truly a statewide radio program today. It's going to be kind of fun.
Isn't technology fun? That we can all have a conversation and be in four distinct or three distinct places in the state?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's a great thing that we can hook up and make it convenient for everybody to participate in the show. Folks can call, text, or tweet your email or your emails or questions, or simply swing by the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Leave us a comment there if you have a question or a comment, please. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. @SDPB is our Twitter handle, and the email address is midday@sdpb.org. Guys, it's already almost the middle of August. I can't believe it.
It is. It's crazy. Summer has been going really, really fast.
Yeah. So we have a lot of technology to talk about today. I think some of it's going to be kind of fun. Some of it may be on the lighter side, but that's going to be fine, too. I wanted to get us right out of the gates today no pun intended, with Windows 10. I just wanted to see, Jeff, if you had made the move yet, or if you were holding off or doing it on some machines, and also get questions from Amos. Your comments, I'm sure you've probably done the upgrade, haven't you?
This is Jeff. I'm holding off a bit. They've already announced that they're going to have a kind of a small service pack in October. And in November, they're actually rolling Windows 10 out to the Xbox Ones. So there's some changes coming up. For the most part, the people who have upgraded, though, have had really positive experiences and stuff. There's a few gotchas out there, but not very many. And there's already well plus 14 million machines in just the first week. I have already upgraded and are running Windows 10. So,
I was told as a gamer to kind of hang off a bit on that. Is that true?
It is somewhat, though mainly not because of Windows 10, but because of video card drivers. As most gamers know, the video card drivers are video cards are the most important thing in PC gaming anymore. And you really want those to be rock solid. And almost all drivers have some issues with some games in some ways. So, but the rollout's gone pretty good. I haven't really heard any complaints about gamers and stuff at this point, and I think it's probably okay to upgrade now. But if you're like me, I'll probably wait until the service pack kind of one comes out. There are a few minor driver issues. People complain about microphones not working suddenly, and the drivers are not out yet. So, or sound card issues, stuff like that, with some older hardware. They're waiting on driver support. So I got kind of a very high-end setup with a lot of special RAID drivers and stuff. So I think giving it a couple months just to make sure all my hardware drivers are going to work good is going to pay off for me in the end versus maybe blowing my machine up. So,
you know, when I get home tonight, I may just feel spunky and do it. You know, if I can go to the 75th Sturgis Motorcycle Rally and survive, I can probably survive an upgrade to Windows 10. I just may do it.
Yes, but I've been watching on Facebook, and not all of you survive. Your motorcycle had some problems, right?
My bike, I had a few mechanical problems, but it's a Harley, so you need to expect that, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Isn't that the purpose in owning a Harley is to work on it? That's at least half the fun, from what I hear, right?
I was surprised to hear that you said there's not a Harley mechanic in that town.
Okay, so I got to qualify that. there were many, many certified Harley mechanics in Sturgis. Just none of them at the Sturgis Harley dealership. They're all down at the Black Hills dealership in Rapid City. And the reason my bike could not have been worked on by any of those in Sturgis was my bike is so new, it's under base warranty, and that has to be covered by a dealership. So just I had to qualify that. It was because of my warranty I needed to have it towed. So just... What a device, though, this flatbed, you know, kind of on the back of this, dually pickup truck, just kind of hydraulically, kind of magically comes down, and you just kind of push your bike up onto it and kind of hook it on there, and then it just sort of hydraulically lifts the bike up into the bed of the pickup truck, and off you go. It's magical. I kind of need one of those.
You know, we've talked before about the amount of technology and the computers that are involved in cars. Are you finding that same thing migrating into the motorcycle space too?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's some South Dakota connections there. There's been some folks up on the I-29 corridor that have been doing digital dashboards and things for motorcycles for quite a while, speedometers and tachometers and things like that, some third-party aftermarket kind of things. But the integration, especially of media into motorcycles on the bigger touring bikes, you know, it kind of started back in the day when they had the headsets you could wear so you could talk to the other person, the kind of helmet-to-helmet kind of stuff, and then the CB stuff from bike to bike kind of happened, and then the evolution of that was Bluetooth. Into motorcycles, and satellite radio, of course, came along. It was an option on the bike I bought. I didn't go for that option, but it's got the entertainment system that's got the Bluetooth. It's got a plug-in for the USB plug-in, so you can either plug a cell phone in there and it'll communicate to iPhones or Androids, or you can plug a jump drive in there and have your playlist there and just, you know, start listening to music if you want to. It's also a charge port, and then there's a couple of, you know, the old time cigarette lighters, they call them power ports now, on the front and the back of the bike as well. So, you know, and not to mention the giant navigation screen that came stock on my bike as well. Really neat. It works just like a Garmin would, or a TomTom or whatever. You type in the address you want to go to, and the magic voice comes across the speakers and says, calculating route, and off you go. So there's all kinds of third-party things to hang on motorcycles that don't come with this stuff, from, more advanced air ride systems. You can make adjustments, you know, while you're going down the road if you want to the suspension. There's some neat ones that kind of move your foot position with the floorboards. They're almost hydraulic type technology there that you can change kind of riding positions as you're going down the road as well. So yeah, there's a lot of really neat, biker tech out there for making your ride a little bit more enjoyable and safer too.
Sure.
Anti-lock brake systems for one. If you're really
pretty soon, they're going to put two more wheels on it and like a lid on it, so it'll be really comfortable.
I believe me.
Air conditioning.
If you go to Sturgis, you'll see, two wheels, three wheels, four wheels. You'll see multiple wheels on all kinds of devices, and all kinds of not devices, but all kinds of vehicles, and you see a bit of everything. You see the canopies and the big windshields, and you see just about anything. Believe me, you'll see things that you can't unsee as well. But there's a lot of neat things, and that's part of the charm or the reason people go to Sturgis, is not only to people watch, but also to kind of look at bikes and look at, you know, people bring in motorcycles that are still running from, that are, you know, 50, 60, 70 years old. And they were high tech at the time. And now you kind of have to marvel at, these bicycles really that people started putting motors on. And you see everything, like I said, from the really early days to the latest, 2015 models, and tricked out with the big wheels on the front and the speaker systems. I saw a guy with the subwoofer, the tour pack on the back of the big touring bikes, the the lug, basically the big piece of luggage on the back. I saw a guy with a subwoofer cut into the lid of the back of the bike, and then in the top of the side bags, the saddle bags had speakers in them as well. So, you know, they're just getting out there and enjoying them, I guess. Not something I would do, but to each his own, and that's why you have all these options for upgrades to really customize it and make it the way you want it. So, really kind of cool. But all right, so let's get off this Windows 10 thing. You know why it's not called? We went from 8 to 10.
Why?
The number. Because 7, 8, 9.
Oh, my goodness. That's, if my day can only go up from that joke. So I feel happy that was the low point of my day.
So there is an actual reason why they went from 8 to 10.
Really? Because it's been really thinly veiled.
I
want to
know the real reason.
It's because there are a lot of programs out there that look at the operating system that it's using, and it looks for that 9 to distinguish if it's a Windows 95 or a 98 machine.
Oh.
And so if they would have went to Windows 9, it could have caused some issues with some misrepresentation as to what operating system you're using. So they jumped from 8 to 10 to avoid that confusion.
I like that. That sounds like a really well-thought-out actual
reason. I'm surprised anybody thought that far forward to.
No, smart.
Yeah. So...
All right.
So my final question about Windows 10, and Jeff or Amos or anybody asking Nick this, on my new gaming box, I've got an SD drive that is my main drive, and it's in the modern world, it's really small gigabyte wise, and it's really running out of room quickly. I don't think Windows 10 is going to download on that drive and install and be okay. Am I okay? Is Windows going to know that and download it on my data drive, or what steps do I need to do to make sure I can get the whole thing downloaded and installed right?
If Windows today is installed on the SSD, install on the SSD. Now, there's several ways. If you tell it to go and kind of delete all the old stuff, the Windows 10 footprint is actually slightly smaller, or about the same as Windows 8. So it really won't, in the end, eat up more space, but you're going to have the space open for it to actually download its files and stuff to install.
It'll know that, right?
It's probably going to want space on the same drive Windows installed. It's not that smart to go looking for, you know, extra drives to go put its temporary files on.
Okay,
so.
But it's going to check and make sure I've got enough room before I actually
it, right? It won't blow up your machine. It will prompt you and say, hey, you're out of room. You're going to need to delete some stuff or run disk cleanup. In order to be able to actually get the install to work, so
sure.
Let me just pose a quick question, and just to piggyback on what you're talking about there, and Amos, maybe you know. I assume what you're talking about, Kent, is you're going to download the install on a drive and then take that to another computer. Is that what you were saying?
No, I'm worried that the SD drive the SSD drive that I have is going to get the download and then not be able to do the install because it's so tight.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, because I've heard a little a few things about that where people were saying they were going to download it and try and install it over to another computer, and I think that, and I don't have a lot of experience with Windows 10 doing this, or really any. however, that seems like a terrible idea to me. I would highly recommend everybody run the install on the download for that specific computer, because I know that they have built all those checks in, and that's probably the safest way to do it, rather than trying to, you know, outsmart your computer software download install.
Yeah, unless you're an administrator that knows how to do those install.
And honestly,
packages.
I would venture a guess. You're probably still not smarter than the install and the folks over at Microsoft. I'm just guessing. No offense to any administrators out there, but that'd just be my guess. I would go with the standard install over trying to make an end run. I don't know what you think, Amos.
I would try to let the system be as self-sufficient as possible. If it was designed to work that way, let it work that way. I actually feel like I've maybe let the show down just a little bit because I have not touched Windows 10 yet. And maybe that's a sign of my...
You're just setting up for a really good, honest appraisal of it when you do install
it.
That's what it is.
You know, there was a time in my life where I liked to tinker with that stuff. And I should take that back. I still like to tinker. There was a time in my life where I had time to tinker with that sort of stuff. Right. And now today, it's just not, I just don't have that
Well,
time.
Don't you think, and I don't think it's you, I really don't. I think it's the general populace. You know, you look at the fact that now Microsoft is giving the new version of Windows away for free. Apple has done that for years now in both their mobile and their desktop platforms. Android does that. And I think the reason is not because they're trying to compete, but because people just don't want to deal with that anymore. There was a time when I think a lot of people liked to tinker with their operating system like that was an important thing. I honestly don't think that is the case. I think operating systems are not what they used to be as far as in the public mind. A new operating system, wow, I can't wait. They like the new features. They really could care less about, you know, the new operating system, and I'm going to be the first one on my block to install Windows 10 or Mac OS 10 or whatever. I just don't think it's that important anymore.
You know, I think there's a segment of society that still does that.
There's also people that
equivalent 20 years ago that is that IT major in college or even that eighth grader in their mom's basement.
For sure,
that wants to do that, but I agree. I think it's becoming less and less of a novelty to do that sort of stuff. And now you're just to the point. I just want it to work.
Yeah, I want the stuff that the operating system lets me do. I don't really care about the operating system so much. Yeah.
You know, there was a time where an operating system was amazing and wow, and it had a lot of panache that goes with that. And now we just expect it.
And we want it to be intuitive, and we don't want to have to learn things about it. We want it to do what we ask when we do it.
Kind of getting back to your original question. One of the things, especially if Windows is installed, and this is a good thing for anyone running out of space, is every update you've ever installed actually has a whole bunch of restore points and a copy left on there. I can usually go on my system and just by wiping out all those saved update files, because unless you're going to uninstall, you don't need them. You can usually recover a few up to 10 gigabytes worth of dry space right before you do your upgrade. The upgrade will wipe them out anyway, and you'll get that space back. But if you need temporary space, that's the easier one way to go. And there's some online instructions that are too hard to follow to automate the process, is to wipe them out to recover that disk space. So.
Great idea. Hey, we need to take a quick phone call before we go to break. Carol joins us from Sioux Falls. Carol, you got a question about TiVo?
Yes, I just recently switched from a satellite to basic cable, and all they wanted of my remains of the direct was the card inside the TiVo. Can any use be made of the TiVo for like straight push button recording or anything like that?
Oh, great question. So she's turned the card, the satellite card in from her TiVo.
Yes.
Can she use that for anything else? That's a great question.
Well, a quick question. Is it an actual TiVo, or are you just saying using TiVo as the generic DVR or digital video recorder?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm just going to assume that if it's from you said Dish Network or DirecTV or whichever, I assume it's actually not a TiVo-branded device, but rather the satellites provided DVR or digital video recorder. And so we'll assume that that's what it is. And so they want to take their card back because they don't want you to figure out a way, and there's a way to do this, to get free satellite service if you have the DVR plus the ever-important encoding that is on that card.
Yeah.
The only thing you can really do with that device without the card is hook it up and watch the stuff you've already recorded, which is yours, and you can do. But it's basically a completely dumb device without that card, and is basically unusable. The only other use, of course, is to sell it to somebody who will then get a card from the satellite provider and then use it themselves.
And, you know, I think even that might vary because
I
mentioned, you know, that I took a hiatus from my satellite provider. When they put my subscription on hold, I actually no longer can access the recorded video on there as well. It tells me it's just not available.
Huh.
And so I suppose, you know, the license probably said that I can use that stuff as long as I have an active paid subscription, but that data continues to remain theirs. I don't know. I didn't read it.
Yeah, and you said it was Dish Network? Or
mine's DirecTV.
DirecTV, yeah.
And
there might be a difference between the two. I know my old Dish DVR.
So it's good for recycling then.
Yeah, or sell it to somebody who doesn't want to buy one. I'm sure there's a market for them.
Replacement parts, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you could contact a local satellite provider. They may give you a few bucks for it, or certainly they take it for recycling.
And the reason that's the only thing they ask for back is that's really the only sort of, in the scheme of things, expensive part in there. The rest of it is, you'd be surprised at how basic a DVR is. It's just a hard drive and a small motherboard inside. Yeah. So they want that back because that's their proprietary information. The rest of it, it's not worth the shipping for them. Plus, what are they going to do with an old, used one that's maybe a couple years old? They can't really send it out.
They'd rather sell it, big new ones to somebody
else.
Right,
exactly.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Carol. We appreciate it. And we do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we need to talk more about, this intrigues me from Joel, biological encoding as storage. I'm interested in that. We need to have an update on the Apple Watch. And drones, after this. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've got Mac expert Joel Brovelite with us from DataSync, Amos Asaf, and from the Bureau in Peer, Jeff Litterick joins us today. Call, tweet, or text or email your questions, or please simply swing by our Facebook page and leave us a comment, facebook.com/techradio, as Sue has done. She recently got an Amazon Fire Stick and needs to know if she can use it to access other services like Hulu Plus, HBO Now, Showtime, etc. Can Sue do this with her stick, guys? Do we know?
You know, I'm not as familiar with the Fire Stick as I am with maybe some of the other services, which is goofy since I'm a huge Amazon fan. I've been an Amazon Prime member forever. I don't know.
What was the question about the Fire Stick again?
Well, she's asking what other services can you get other than Amazon's streaming video services over it? Anything like Hulu or...
Yeah, it won't do Hulu. I believe you can do HBO Now and Showtime. They don't do any like direct competitors like Hulu. There are a few services. I'm blanking on them now. I can look it up while we're talking. It's not as full-featured as basically any other one out there because Amazon, not only do they have a streaming service, they have the device. So, of course, they're going to have a narrower
It actually
plate.
Does support Hulu. I just went up.
It does, okay.
The page itself.
Brilliant.
It will support Amazon, of course, Netflix, HBO Go, and Hulu Plus. Plus a whole bunch of little smaller stuff. So, it's actually ESPN, Bloomberg TV, Showtime Anywhere, HBO Go, Hulu Plus, Netflix. So it seems to be really well-rounded. There's actually quite a few providers now.
Does it happen to say how she accesses that, or is that a menu option or something? Or
no, I'm just going off the actual order page on Amazon because they list all the services and stuff. I assume you have to just subscribe, like the HBO Go, independently, and then somehow the stick, you'd give it your user account information, and it would be able to connect up to you. I assume Netflix is the same way. You subscribe to it, and you just put in your – there's an app on it that you just tell it your username and password, and you get access. So. They all seem to be a whole bunch of little tiny apps. There's YouTube, there's Twitch, there's Spotify's on there. There's quite a few History Channel, quite a few little independents for that Fire Stick. So
I'll track that down after the show. The answer I want to begin with is to start back in logging into Amazon. They do some things that when they authenticate your Prime membership and devices and things, there are some back areas in there I'm going to check out. And then since she put a post on Facebook, it'll be really easy to reply to that after the show and get her some links. But that's great to know that even with the Fire Stick, you can get off campus there and get some other things. I got to say, I haven't even powered up I can't even remember what it's called now, that my Roku, since and my Chromecast is completely unplugged from my TV since I and you tell me if I try to stream an HD show to that, it's chunking up on me. It either has a black screen, it's showing fine on my computer, but when it's going over my Wi-Fi or whatever over to the Chromecast, it's not playable. Have you had that problem? Anybody?
You know, I actually used my Chromecast for the first time in a while last night. Mm-hmm. Again, because I cut the cord, I don't have Fox News as a TV channel. And so I did find that it was being streamed on YouTube, and so I was able to cast that to my TV. And actually, I had that issue last night. I had a lot of buffering where the little circle would spin and then it would play for 3 seconds and then mm-hmm. stop. And what I found helped was I paused the playback for, you know, a minute or so, allowed the system to buffer, and then hit play again, and it went through. If it's working on your laptop, then, you know, it's obviously not an internet connection because that's using that same one, and it's obviously not a wireless connection, although, you know, your Chromecast stick could be in an area that has more interference than your laptop does.
Mm-hmm. Let me back up and say, this is a file that I've downloaded. I have the HD file, the hour-long file, and I'm just simply playing it back from the laptop. And I can, you know, obviously I can take an HDMI cable and plug it into the side of the laptop and put it into the TV and watch it, but that sort of defeats the purpose of the Chromecast in making it convenient for me.
Sure.
I don't know this for sure, but if I had to guess with a specific problem, I would guess it's probably a video card driver issue or possibly the Wi-Fi, the network.
I was going to say
issue.
The router.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's probably one of those two things. It's surprising how much the video card in your computer has to do with streaming video to another display. That is an important part of it that I think people think, that, you know, it's just a display, but there's a lot of processing goes on the back end to stream that over Wi-Fi. So those would be my two guesses without actually having seen it.
Yeah, it's a 970 card, so it's one of the top ones you can buy.
Yeah, it's the driver issue. It doesn't matter if super secret NASA card. The drivers are bad.
I have that.
The drivers are bad.
The super secret NASA card.
Yeah. I think that's what Jeff has.
Yes.
Like I said, I haven't even plugged in my Roku or my Chromecast lately because I'm using the TiVo to access all those other services. It just makes it really super convenient.
Oh, yeah,
it's just on a remote.
Yeah, one area
you hit the TiVo
nice.
Button. Yeah, it's all right there. And that's a pretty close representation of the sound.
I was going to say, that's the noise it makes, too, that you just did there.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and if one of you guys doesn't catch that before I do, I'll make a reply on the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. You know, if you have the answer, the listeners of the show today, you can go on there and reply to Sue as well. That'd be a wonderful thing for you to do. There is a nice post on that page. I was just going to bring it up. The whole Cecil the Lion thing sparked some debate on cyber vigilantism and things. And it's a topic that we've talked about on the show today as well, since the tweets from the executive that went to Africa and things like that. And we've had some interesting articles on there. If you go to the Facebook page, you'll find a link to the article I'm talking about. The cyber vigilantism, and it's really a good read and brings up some really interesting points that I wanted to share out there for everybody as well. Joel, I wanted to hit this topic. I mentioned it before the break. Biological encoding as storage. What were you talking about there? You got me intrigued.
What are you talking about? You know, if you it's not in the main news, but if you do some searching and listen to a lot of, you know, tech podcasts and read some trades, you'll see that bubbling around all of the edges are these ideas that DNA, whether that's human DNA or any other DNA, is not probably, but likely to be the storage of choice in the future. And the reason is, if you think about DNA, you know, 1 gram of DNA, 1 gram of a biological substance, which is just a super small amount, has enough theoretical storage in it to store the entirety of Google and Facebook right now. And if you think about, you know, it was big news 10 years ago, and it's still big news, of course, you know, the DNA sequence of humans was mapped out, and now we're doing the DNA sequence of all these other organisms and creatures. And basically, there's tons of data in every strand and every DNA, every cell in your body or in any living thing. And scientists have already been tapping that as a way to store data. And the advantage is, of course, obviously limitless storage, literally limitless storage. And secondarily, you know, we can extract DNA from things as old as 700,000 years. So not only, you know, your hard drive, if you're lucky, you can get that to last 10 years. DNA can last 700,000 years, potentially longer, you know, in the right environment. So there's no practical use of this right now, but soon, and by soon, I mean in the next 10, 15 years, you're going to see, you know, strides made towards biological data encoding. And it won't be like you'll get like a lump of cells and then you're going to plug a USB stick into it. It will be more complicated than that, because of course there's ethical issues in there. It'll be more likely like a powder that is frozen in a stasis, that isn't technically a living being, but that data will be stored in this, you know, very small amount and will be virtually permanent. You know, so it's really big news, and, you know, there are stories out there. I could probably throw some up on our Facebook page, but there's a lot of research being done at all of the major tech firms, Google, Apple, and certainly, in all of, you know, the scientific, / medical community.
Yeah, yeah. Please post it to your to our Facebook page. Don't.
Yeah, it's just
up
really
there.
Interesting stuff.
A little too close to home for the last week for me. so you're really talking the Johnny Mnemonic kind of stuff here. You remember that?
Yeah,
movie?
Although way more awesome than Johnny Mnemonic. Johnny Mnemonic is a short story by William Gibson that was eventually made into a movie that was kind of okay.
It was okay. It was like an 80s thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just don't think it was very popular. But, you know, the idea of basically that a human being's brain would be used to store all of this information, and, you know, it was so detrimental to him, and, you know, he had flat... We've all seen those type of movies. But realistically, the storage is way larger than even that story or that movie or any movie you've ever seen is available, and way less... potentially way less detrimental to your health. You know, when you're talking 1 gram of biological matter, you know, you wouldn't even see that on your skin. It wouldn't have any ill effects on your body, theoretically, again, but it would store the whole of Google and Facebook. 2 grams would store more than the entire capacity of every computer on the planet right now. So, That's a lot of storage, and we're a ways off from that. But you know, as storage gets smaller and more and smaller and smaller, and we want solid state storage, and they're gonna look to these things for possibilities where you know, microscopic pathways are just going to fail at some point.
That's so very, very interesting.
Crazy, awesome stuff.
Before we take a quick break, we got an email from Kent. Must be our problem solver today. I've had this. He's talking about Chromecast here. He says I had the same streaming problem with one of my 3 Chromecasts. I bought the $15 Ethernet adapter from Google, and that seems to have solved the problem that the one was having. And that was sent from his mail for Windows 10. So early adopter Kent has had a reply for that. So what is he basically doing there? You're just using Ethernet instead of the Wi-Fi to get the data over to the Chromecast?
Sounds like it. Which would put it more towards what Amos was saying for the problem, that it was probably a network problem. And I don't know that fixes it. It actually doesn't fix it. It allows you to do what you want it to do, but doesn't fix the underlying problem, which could be a problem for anything else.
Right. Well, and now you got to get a wire to your TV.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, I've got a really fantastic Asus gaming router, so unless I need to flash that and do some updates, or there's an issue there, it should not be having any throughput problems as far as my.
And there is a possibility your Chromecast is, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah, I would. If I run ACs myself, they do regular updates, and they usually improve the wireless. Wireless is kind of always in motion. It could be the Comcast device updated and is now having some compatibility problems. I would always suggest, if for anyone with any type of home router, at least once a month, go out and check just for security updates, much less wireless fixes. I've had to update my ACs a couple of times over the past 3 years to fix wireless issues that have cropped up with new devices. So always had good luck after an update, though. So I would try that first before going the cable route. But
all right. Yeah, I'm definitely not doing running.
Well, actually, to be honest with you, I would try the cable route first if you had that available. And the reason I'd try it first is because then you'd immediately know where the problem was. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just a good troubleshooting technique no matter what. You know, try the easy ways first. Try the ways you can eliminate where the problem is, and then you then find the problem.
It does require the purchase of that piece of hardware, that adapter.
Sure, although if the Chromecast is $35, that thing can't be even that much. And, you know, then you'd have it around for the emergency.
Great. Okay.
I have an emergency TV show.
Well,
to watch.
You would have last night. If you could have done it, you would have plugged it in. You're like, oh, you'd have complained, but you'd have plugged it in.
That's
and
true.
You'd have watched your thing.
That's true.
So there you go.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, as promised, we've got drones to talk about, cable modems, Steve Jobs. We've got all kinds of topics that we'll take on after this. And welcome back to the third half of Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys for this show, August 7th. We want to make a reminder to you that August 21st is the next Tech Radio. And guys, you know, Jeff just reminded everybody to check for updates on their routers. We used to have people do that like every show. We were telling people to, you know, to back up their data files, and we were telling people to, I don't know, check the, you know, Windows updates and do all this stuff. I mean, it just used to be this automatic thing we did every show. I can't remember the last time we told somebody to go out and check for updates on something. That was kind of
Oh, I don't know. I think we kind of always talk about that, but
do we?
A lot of that stuff now, though, is automatic. For example, Windows 10, you don't even get the choice anymore. It's going to update drivers and software of the OS no matter what you do, and any Microsoft products. So, and most of your phones are like that anymore. I mean, yes, sometimes they pester you, but for the most part, the updates push to you anymore, except for a few like Adobe Flash and stuff like that. So a lot of those warnings.
The one that needs to automatically update.
Yeah, have gone in the bypass because it is. I mean, Chrome auto updates, Firefox auto updates. There's a new patch for Firefox out. I didn't have to worry about it. It just updated in the background. I just had to restart it this morning. So a lot of that stuff is being taken out of the user's hands where they have to go, unlike routers. Routers, still, you kind of have to manually update. And we may get into this later, but if you have a Tesla, you want to get their software update this month because they've been hacked. The Internet of Things kind of thing is going to have to require auto-updating for everything from cars to fridges to really make it work, and I think most of the manufacturers have caught on to that. So,
didn't you mention that Android phones are going to start? Are they going to start pushing updates every month now?
Yeah, well, certain manufacturers. There was in July. There's a bug that affects almost every Android device in existence. Really, really bad one. And up to this point, the updates have been on the phone manufacturers, and they don't usually support phones that are over 18 months old, so unless you're buying the latest and greatest phone, you're not getting security updates. But just now, just this week, Samsung, LG, and Google have now verified that they will start, just like Microsoft does with their Windows, monthly patch cycle updates for the Android phones that they produce, and that you will be able to update just like an Apple iPhone or your desktop computer, those phones. Now, if you have another manufacturer, then you're kind of still up to their mercy, but at least it's a work in progress. It's been the weak link in the Android phone system forever, and hopefully it gets fully fixed and patched over time.
All right. Well, we're in the hacking mood here. You'd mentioned the Tesla issue. Was there an FDA warning this week as well?
Yeah, one of the things out of the Black Hat and DEF CON conferences is, well, and we've talked about this before somewhat, the Internet of Things, right? You attach everything to the Internet. And it was kind of funny because the biggest security news is weren't about computers. They were about cars. They were about medical devices. They weren't about printers. Using printers and being a takeover and actually use them as a radio transmitter to interfere with Wi-Fi networks or hook into a Wi-Fi network and steal data remotely.
How does that work? How is that going to work?
It's kind of interesting hacking because a lot of printers have I/O ports and cards, and there's kind of long cables that can act as antennas that they found a way to modulate the I/O ports in a way to actually create a radio transmitter from the printer itself, and pretty strong one. It can penetrate concrete walls and stuff from sort of printers, mainly big office printers that have a lot of power on them, you know, the big laser color jets and stuff like that. So the FDA came out with a couple warnings this past week. They're expecting a whole bunch more on medical devices because a lot of people don't realize this, but a lot of medical devices are going wireless, Bluetooth, pacemakers and stuff like that. And so now they're standard. Anyone can interface with them. They're open to be hacking, just like the Chrysler cars last month. And then the Tesla was hacked the same way this week, in which they could take over the car. They could actually stop, start it at less than 5 miles an hour. They could engage the parking brakes and redo your speedometer into whatever they wanted. Kind of a complete control of the computer system. Now, Tesla has released a security fix, right? So you're going to need to patch your car now. The Internet of Things, it's going to be interesting because there's going to be a lot of patching of anything that has wireless, even if it's not attached directly to the Internet, like a pacemaker. How are you going to patch a pacemaker and still not, you know, you don't really want to reboot the thing when by yourself, right? What are the safety mechanisms? What are the dangers? Everyone's going to have to get a little bit more informed about all their devices and the hazards, especially if it's, you know, a car going 80 miles down the road or a medical device that's implanted in your body.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this news story, and I think a lot of people did, specifically with the Tesla story. I mean, kind of the bigger story about the Tesla story about it being hacked is that they already knew that was a possibility, not this specific hack, but that hacking a computer in your car is a possibility. So they already had a plan in place for updates, and they've already been updating. You know, there's already a plan in place for Tesla to send updates to your car every month, and they've been doing that. That's nothing new. That's just normal for them. Your car updates every month if you own a Tesla. So they already had a plan in place, which is not the case for several other cars on the market. But I look at it as the most obvious non-news story of the week that, hey, the car has a computer in it and it can be hacked. Who didn't think that a computer in a device could be hacked? That just seems like if it hooks up to the internet or could possibly hook up to the internet, it's going to be hacked. I think that's just obvious. I think anybody would see that. So I think more importantly is the news from Tesla about the auto updates, the news from Google about the auto updates being pushed for Android and how those are going to be done and how the companies are going to handle it. Not that they can be hacked. If I never see a news story about, oh, there's a new hack that involves, of course there is. There's just absolutely going to be hacks for every device you have. It's more important to know how are they going to fix it and how fast is it going to be done and what's the method of disbursement. That's what I'm interested in.
I want to. I don't know if this is going to wrap the show up or not on the discussion, but there's been a lot of drone talk. People have been droning on and on and on about drones in the news. It must be bad joke day for me or something. So we have had interference from drones apparently grounding some firefighting equipment, some planes that are used to fight fires because these things are up there flying and they're not supposed to be there. There's been concerns in the news. The guy that strapped a pistol to his drone and flew a drone around and shot a gun, shot an actual pistol from the drone, is really raising some concerns. Are we gonna? We were just trying to get people to loosen up a little bit on drones. Is some of this stuff gonna cause the clampdown that nobody really wants?
Yeah, one that you didn't even mention is two different drones spotted in airport traffic space with planes that were trying to land having to be called off. One of the famous fire ones actually blocked, if you remember the Las Vegas corridor from Los Angeles on interstate, cars got burned up. Well, that was because drones were overhead and they could actually suppress the fire close to the interstate. You know, there's a whole bunch of rules for RC aircraft, and I doubt most drone operators have actually gone through and seen the drones and followed those rules, because technically a drone is an RC-type aircraft, and there's actually quite a few regulations and things that need to be applied to. For example, restricted airspaces and stuff for, like, firefighting stuff, and it's going to be interesting if they try to pass new rules or if they really start enforcing these rules. Especially for airport spaces and stuff like that. I don't think most people realize, but to be technically in public airspace, you need to be at least 200 feet up, which means if your drone is below that, some guy in Kentucky shot a drone out of the sky, and all he got charged was shooting a gun in public space because it was, from his claim, below 200 feet. So, and that was over his property, so, you know, it's not really part of his airspace, but it is part of the privacy concerns. I have a feeling, you know, this is going to come to a head probably sooner rather than later, especially if someone does get into a life-involving accident or someone loses a life over one of these situations, and we'll have to see how it's handled. Right now, it's kind of like the laser pointers at airplanes and stuff. Kind of hard to define them sometimes, but with drone operators, it may be a little bit easier to trace them back because they do normally have to be in the, you know, vicinity of the drone incursion. But, it's going to be interesting to play out. And if you are a drone operator, you know, follow the rules and regulations and be good, because we don't really want any more incidents. Drones are very neat tools and can be very helpful, but they can also be abused.
Yeah, I was kind of trolling through a couple of posts this morning on drones, and I saw actually one that was out, was up on the B&H website, that actually has built into it the restricted airspaces in the U.S., and it will not let you fly it into restricted airspace. And I thought that was kind of clever.
Yeah, that sounds like a good reason people won't buy that model.
But I bet eventually that becomes mandated.
Oh, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Well, that's kind of what happened. That came in after the drone landed on the White House lawn, and the feds got very upset, the FAA got upset. So it basically the manufacturer did it to prevent it being mandated, but it probably, if they keep occurring, it will be mandated, especially for those drones that are tied to GPS receivers. The problem with, like, fire zones is, you know, or even some airspace around airports, depending on wind conditions, those restricted zones move around a lot. And, you know, that you can't really update and be really on the fly in that kind of stuff. You have to be kind of aware that, you know, if they're dropping water on a fire, you probably don't need to be flying your drone in that area because it could hit an aircraft, and that would really be a really bad situation then.
How long is it going to take for somebody to figure out how to build a drone killer? And the authorities just release a drone killer and...
Well, people have already started thinking about it using...
or surface air.
Basically jamming technologies to actually jam out the flight controls of the drone and make it crash. That was kind of... I don't know if I remember, it was DEF CON or Black Hat, but somebody had that where you could pit it on like an aircraft, and if a drone got within 300-400 feet, it just basically drop out of the sky by jamming it out. But, you know, all that stuff, we'll see how it comes out.
Yep. Hey, guys, the music, the piano's playing, and we have to go. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I want to thank our panelists today for being there for us. Again, the next show, August 21st. is the next Tech Radio. Please join us then. And as always, stay tuned to SDPB. We've got Science Friday coming up. There's some great topics on that program as well. We're always there at sdpb.org. Find the app and click listen.